Liftoff. We have liftoff.
This is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Like, look at this. This is insane. Like, how did this even happen?
You, like, are so obsessive about these science topics and obviously space.
I only talk about space. They generally, NASA, they know who I am.
You've got 25,000 followers on Twitter, 8,000 on Instagram. Your most popular video has 163,000 views.
I love social media. My first few videos did incredibly well. Everybody's talking about SpaceX all the time. I have a lot of issues with what they do. Like, I'm not a fangirl. That booster landing was amazing.
We have not talked about this at all, really, like the financial side of things.
Yes. I went into this expecting to make no money for the first 2 years. Because I had one video go viral, I was able to do it. I have a policy of, like, even if it scares me, I try to say yes.
Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. Our guest today is Swapna Krishna, the writer, producer, and host of Ad Astra, a YouTube channel and newsletter about space. She's been working on that for about 2 years, and I believe it's her first true indie creator type project, but she's been working as a writer for over a decade across space, science, technology, and pop culture. You may have read her work in Wired, The Verge, NPR, The AV Club, really far too many places for me to list here, plus podcasts. She even published a book last year called Stargazing. It actually is kind of overwhelming how much stuff you've done, Swapna. But let's start with that book. So I think you've been writing professionally for well over a decade, but this is the first time you've published a book, right?
Yes. That was an experience for sure.
How did that come about?
Basically, the publisher reached out to me. It's part of a series called Pocket Nature, and they're these small, really beautifully put together gift books. And there's different books in the series. There's one on clouds. There's one on, like, mushrooms. And basically, the idea is to encourage people to, you know, use nature as a method to mindfulness. And it really intrigued me because mindfulness is generally, I think a lot of us are on that journey, trying to.
Eternally.
Yeah, like, right. Like, especially solo creators who can work all the time. Like, I could work 24/7 and not get everything done I needed to get done. And so there's so much in my life. I try to bring mindfulness to my life. And so it was a really attractive thing to be able to do, to take kind of the science I love and put this mindfulness perspective on it. So I said yes. And then, that was the first time I just sat down and I wrote the book. I started at the beginning. I wrote it. And it was such an experience because I'm so used to shorter stuff, one-off stuff.
This is like the longest form thing you've ever done.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, so the reason I wanted to start with that is, like, it seemed, in my researching you yesterday, it seemed like it really summed up kind of your philosophy in some ways, where, like, you like are so obsessive about these science topics and obviously space, but your, like, your skill and your joy is, like, making these things accessible and, like, nerding out on them with other people and, like, sharing it. And it's this, like, social curiosity, this shared curiosity. I don't know. Is that a fair way to describe kind of your approach to your work?
That hit the nail on the head. That is exactly what I want to do. Space can seem so vast, so incomprehensible. And my goal is to just take little pieces of it and share it with people. You know, I love other people who nerd about space. I love talking to people who know every detail about, you know, the history of Apollo or, you know, the latest SpaceX, you know, vehicle. Like, I enjoy that, but that's not necessarily my primary audience. The primary audience that I try to reach is just people who don't know anything about space but think it could be cool, but don't even know where to start. Like, when I try to talk about things, I try to explain them in a way, whether I'm talking about something very technical or, you know, cosmology and the Big Bang and the evolution of the universe, I try to talk about them in a way where if you know nothing about it, you can still pick it up and follow what's going on and understand why it matters. Like, broader context is very important to me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, in like the welcome video at the top of your YouTube channel, that you kind of say as much. You're like, I'm not a scientist, but I am a science communicator, and, like, my job is to, like, help you understand these things. But so the YouTube channel, before we talk about that, I think we have to talk about PBS's Far Out, which is a YouTube show about the next 50 years of science and technology that you hosted and co-wrote for 7 episodes in, I think, 2022. And these episodes, they did well. I think of the seven, the lowest view count was 8,000. The highest was 347,000.
Yeah.
Was this your first foray into writing and even hosting video content?
Yeah. So this is funny. This series, it didn't run for my part in it didn't run for long, as you said, yeah. Seven episodes, but it really changed my career in a lot of ways. I'm very grateful to the experience. There was good and there was bad. Like, of course, as any...
Always the story.
Always the story. Like, always the story with anything that you work on but don't own. But what it did was it basically taught me I have a natural affinity for being on camera, which I never knew. I never knew. And if you watch the episodes, I'm proud of my performance, and that was my first thing in a... It was some of my first stuff in a studio. Mm-hmm. I don't think my performance was very natural. I have a lot of criticism, but anyway. Oh. But I learned so much. And that's, like, all I want out of any experience. That's all I want out of anything I do in my career. I want to learn something and be able to, you know, build on it or do better. So when I got the offer, it was a year between when I kind of got the offer for that show and when it actually started production. So there was a very long lead time, and I got the offer, and like, I was just like, can I do this? Like, I don't even know.
You started second guessing.
Yeah. I'd never done video. I'd always been a print person. And I'd done podcasting, but like, I'd never done video. I had no idea if this was something that I would be good at, that I wanted to do. So what I decided to do, I have a policy of, like, even if it scares me, I try to say yes. Unless if there's a good reason to say no, I'll say no.
I totally agree.
I used to say yes to everything, and then I got, like, so overwhelmed and burned out. So now it's kind of like, if there's not a good reason to, if the only reason to say no is I'm anxious about it, that's not a good enough reason to say no. But if, like, I feel like I'm overwhelmed, I will absolutely say no.
Well, I forget who I learned this from, but somebody said, like, you know, every time you say yes to something, you're saying no to other things too,
yes.
Which I think is like a good way to frame it.
That's exactly it. And I'm at a point in my career where I get a lot of offers, so I don't say yes to everything, but this is something I was like, this is a challenge. This is something I've never done. Mm-hmm. Let's see how it goes. So I said, okay. And then I was like, one of the hardest parts of podcasting, and most of my podcasting has just been for fun. I've not really.
So real quick, you've been doing this podcast. What is it? Daisy
Geek Girls, yeah.
Since 2017.
Yes,
done,
oh my
88
God.
Episodes. which I like about this too.
It was that long.
So almost 8 years. You don't do it every week. Sometimes it's like every month right now. In the beginning, I think it was every week. I guess let's go. This is a tangent from the PBS thing, and then we'll go back to the PBS thing. So was that kind of your first like non-written thing that you
yes.
were doing, where you're okay.
Where yeah. I was regularly doing something non-written. And I was really nervous about that too, because yeah. I was like, I don't think any of us like the sound of our voice when we first yeah. start doing things like that.
You gotta
get
like, over it.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, but it was an excuse to talk to my best friend, who we're still best friends, on a regular basis about the things we love. Because while we talk about life and our work and stuff like that, you know, because we don't live in the same place. I have a kid. Like, it's just, we're not talking on, like, the phone a lot. A lot of our talk is about texting.
We're creating this really intentional hour.
That's exactly it. Yeah. And we created this time for us to talk about the things, like, the stuff we have in common that we love. And we only talk about what we love. We don't really go into, negative criticism.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it was. And, you know, we still do it sporadically. We're not as on regular of a schedule as we've both gotten more. Yep. As we've gotten more busy. But that experience, actually, because I'm the one who edits it. Preeti, my podcast partner, is the one who does all the like the show notes and stuff like that. And I edit. That's our division of labor there. Editing it is what got me used to listening to the sound of my voice.
Oh.
So I was like, okay, if that's the case, then I need to get used to, in a pretty quick manner, like my face being slung around on a thumbnail without cringing, being able to watch and kind of turn off that part of my brain that is like, oh, I'm seeing myself on screen.
I think there's another thing that like is like such a internet, you know, creating stuff for the internet, rule or truism that I've learned is like, don't kill the part of yourself that's cringe. Kill the part of yourself that cringes.
That's exactly
it. Yourself.
And this is my work. So I was just like, if I'm going to be on video, I need to get used to seeing myself on video. Mm-hmm. So that's when I started. I was just like, okay, I'm not a huge consumer of video.
Oh, yeah.
I'm of the era where I prefer the written word. That's how my brain works. But I was like, okay, let me try TikTok. I wasn't expecting anything of this. I didn't go into it being like, okay, I have to be successful. This was just something where I'm like, okay, I'm going to start doing this and see what happened and see what happens. And it just like took off. Like it just, my first few videos did incredibly well. So I was like, okay, maybe there is something here. Maybe I do have an appeal on camera. So I started doing it more and more. And exactly, I killed the part of myself that cringed by just, once you cut yourself on video enough, once you edit your own videos enough, you're just like, eh, this is me. This is who I am. It's fine. And so that's kind of, and then so I did that for a year before the PBS like shoots actually started, which helped so much with like getting
You were doing like your own TikToks before that started as like a warm up. Okay.
Exactly. Because it was a year between they sent me the offer and I was like, okay, I need to get comfortable.
Yeah.
Seeing myself on video before we actually started shooting. And that has helped so much. I think just doing that, even as a personal project, even if it hadn't been like a thing that I started doing professionally, like just to get myself used to my own face, my own voice on camera. So when the PBS stuff started, I was more able to critique my performance, take notes in a way that didn't feel personal, in a way that didn't feel...
To produce yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. But what that experience left me with is the thing that my husband has been like, has been on, like not on my case, but like saying for years, we're like, you need to do your own thing. Mm-hmm. He was like, you pour yourself into these projects that are owned by other people, and which is great, but like at the end of the day, you don't own it and you always end up getting burned because like the state of journalism right now, and this, it's not great. It's hard. It's frustrating.
That's what they put it, yeah.
Yeah. Like every journalism like job I have thought about, I'll think of applying and going in house and being like, oh, that's a dream job. And like, there's mass layoffs at that publication, like 6 months later, that's always how it goes. So after PBS, basically we decided to part ways. They wanted to take the show in a different direction. And I have a young child and I was having to travel a lot and like just, I travel a lot for work, totally fine, but just the frequency of it wasn't working for me. So happy to part ways, but it taught me that A, I actually do enjoy video. I do enjoy doing video. And B, that I was ready and at a point in my career where I think I had the experience and the platform and just the drive to do it myself.
Yeah. Well, wait. Okay. I want to get a little pedantic for
a second. Okay. Yeah.
So the term creator in the internet sense, how do you define that term? And is it something you identify with?
I absolutely identify with it, both all the good, all the bad. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of good. There's a lot of bad. And I identify with all of it. I do still see myself as a journalist, which a lot of creators don't. A lot of creators, when they go creator, they lean into the influencer.
Yeah.
You know, label, which is totally fine, and I don't judge that at all. But for me, being able to report on space, I do feel like I need to maintain independence. Like, I need to, which is hard.
Well, what defines a journalist? Because, okay, so for context, like, I've talked to some people who are, like, come from a pure creator background, some who come from a journalist background. The one I published last week, this woman, Caitlin Dewey, she's got this great newsletter. Thinks I would G-chat you if we were friends. She has been a journalist. She's been in journalism about as long as you have, I think. But she, like, this year, just or like a year ago, decided to go all in on her newsletter. And she was like, I really don't like the term creator. I think what I'm doing is very different. I don't think, like, I'm a creator journalist. I'm a journalist who happens to have a newsletter as a platform. And I've talked to other people who, like, come from a very similar background. Like, oh, yeah, I'm a creator journalist. So it's like, I don't know. I think people have very different opinions on this. So, yes. So I guess, how would you define a journalist? Do you even define it in opposition to a creator? Or is it just like, it's kind of the same, swimming in the same pool?
I think it can't. I think you can be both a journalist and a creator. But even if you kind of talk about newsy topics, that doesn't mean you're a journalist. I feel like being a journalist means... I'm very conscious of sponsors, where my money comes from. I will not accept, the reality of doing it independently means you either have to charge your subscribers, or take sponsors or both. I am at a place where I do not want to charge subscribers. Like, I think people are a little bit tired of being nickel and dimed for every newsletter.
Yeah. You have done a Patreon in the past, though, right?
I do. I do have a Patreon because, but I don't gatekeep my content. I have a Patreon in case people want to, but
it's like
a
tip jar.
Exactly. That's exactly what I look at it as. And it really does, and it helps so much with just like paying for newsletters, costs, paying for, but I don't want to gatekeep the content because the entire point of my content to me is appealing to people who don't necessarily have an interest in space, but want to be awed. They want to have that knowledge. And I think putting it behind a paywall kind of works against that. Like, I'm not going to get
sharing knowledge.
Exactly. I'm not going to get casual interest if it's behind a paywall. Like, that's just kind of my philosophy. So that means I have to accept money from sponsors to monetize the thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's other sources.
But then it's like disclosing it. Like, cause to me too, like when I, like how I see the designation between like creator journalist creator, because some people maybe come from the creator background, but then they actually are doing journalism.
Yes.
It's like, it's a rigor of reporting, of like facts, of disclosing your sources, of like also the sponsorship thing too. Like, you can be sponsored, but you should disclose that you're sponsored, because obviously that might bring biases. Like, you know, this, like, I try to bring a journalist approach here, but like, this is Beehive funds this whole thing, right? And I try to be a journalist, but like, that's also the reality of it.
That's exactly it. And but part of the reason I do try and say I identify as a creator is because I think there's so much stigma around that word. I think there's a lot of stigma, and I want to do what I can because I know I have a good reputation. I know people know that I have a good reputation, and I want to kind of help destigmatize it because, like, it is good. Like, creating stuff is good, and like it doesn't have to be bad. Like, I don't know. I just feel
So here's my last thing on this. A couple weeks ago, I've been thinking about this question like for months. So I was like, okay, I got to write an essay about this for the newsletter instead of an interview. And where I landed, so my like basic umbrella definition is that a creator is just somebody who's creating content for the internet with the intention of reaching an audience beyond their real life friends and family. You know, you can post to Instagram, but if it's like just for your friends and family, whatever, like, you're not a creator. It's when you start in earnest creating beyond. But that's like on the surface what it is. But I think more, a little deeper, it's actually like a labor relationship. It's that you're, you are independent, but like your boss is actually like the audience. But also if you're on like a revenue share platform like YouTube, you know, where it's AdSense, it's like YouTube is kind of your boss. Like you are working for them, where it's like you're splitting. You're making the money, they're giving you the platform, you're splitting it. So I think, I don't know, it's the making the content, but then it's really more poignantly, it's the labor relationship.
Yes. The bottom line is, even if like Boeing sponsored my newsletter, I would still write the same thing I would write. Like, but in so much of what I do, the appearance is what, like the appearance is what matters. Like I have to, it's not only about me knowing I'm not biased, or it's about my audience knowing it too. And which is why Boeing will never sponsor, you know, space companies will never be a sponsor, because I have to be able to report on these things without any appearance of a conflict of interest. And so like, I think I do very much agree with that definition of creator.
Well, so, okay. So you've held a lot of different types of roles. Like, now you're a creator. You've been like a contributing writer, a freelance writer. You've worked for like tech companies, media, experiment arms. You've been a copy editor. You've held like basically kind of like every labor status a writer can have in the 21st century. I'm curious if you think that there's one that's been like most favorable to you, or even least favorable, like what, since you've experienced them all.
I have two, and both of them are working in newsrooms, funnily enough. Engadget was the turning point of my career. Working in Engadget was, I will never have enough good things to say about that experience. Like, it was transformative for me as a writer, for my career. Most of my kind of like up and coming, like first writing on the internet was like book reviewing, because I was an avid reader. I started reviewing books. And so like, that's where I was like, oh, I can write on the internet, but what do I want to write about? That's kind of where it, like, what do I want to write about? Do I want to write about books for the rest of my life. And like, no, that was not where I wanted to do. And I'd always haven't had a huge interest in space, a lot of knowledge about it. And I was like, oh, like, I could write about this. I think I could do really well at it. But I didn't go to a journalism school. I didn't know how to be like a reporter. I knew how to write, and I knew how to
say like poli sci, right?
Yeah. Poli sci and economics. And so it, like, I don't have that background. I don't know how to be a reporter. I know how to write about things. I know how to research things, but how do I, like, and how do I work in a newsroom? So Engadget, I'd written about space professionally at that point as one-offs, and I think done a good job, but
like just freelance.
Yeah, just freelance. Yeah. But Engadget was where, like, I went to them and was like, I don't have a lot of experience in this, but I think I could be good at this.
I can do the work. Like, I'm the diamond. You just need a polish.
Yes, like take a chance on me.
Yeah,
and you won't regret it. And that's basically what I did. And they took the chance on me, and like that taught me so much about writing concisely. Like, you know, I have writing about a topic, how to write about a topic. I didn't have the background. Yes. Imagine.
Yeah.
Like so much about being edited, writing concisely. If you asked me now, fast forwarding to Ad Astra, my one biggest weakness right now is I don't have an editor and I need one. And so that's like my next goal, to hire somebody to edit me because I need one. And this experience taught me how much I need an editor, what an editor can do, and how to like write, how to report, how to like, taught me so much. And then fast forward from that, I was last year a space editor at Inverse. It was a freelance position, but basically I did the opposite. I took people who are writing these 300 to 500 word news articles about space and edited those. And then that basically gave me the other perspective. And it was a great experience. Again, really good people at Inverse, and really just kind of was like the capstone on that kind of experience. Two different newsrooms, two different roles, but like similar, a lot of connective threads that helped me understand the process of like writing,
the full kind of nose to tail process exactly. of producing writing or work.
Yes. And both of them were like very important experiences. And Gadget just much more transformative because I was there a lot longer. And that was like my first real journalism job. Like, it kind of set me off on this path. So,
So taking it back to video, again, like speaking of like, you know, the different stages of the process, I imagine there was a relatively sizable team for PBS's Far Out. You know, there's thorough reporting. Maybe that's just you. Maybe there's other people researching. I don't know. There's custom animations. There's music. It's a team. And huge now. Team. It sounds like it's kind of just you on the YouTube. So like, how about that? Like figuring out like, okay, you know, I know how to write, but like, what are all the things that go into producing YouTube videos? Tell me about like figuring that out.
Yeah.
It seems like pretty quickly you just went from like, you know, doing it for the first time to like as just a writer and host to now like the writer, producer, the host, the everything.
Yes. I have no help. Zero. Like I don't hire out my editing. I don't, like I said, I didn't have
dreams of doing it.
Yes. I would love like the video editing is the thing that takes the longest. And so that's something I would love to hire out at some point, but I'm also very, very aware of YouTube channels that grow, hire everything out. And then the algorithm changes and overnight they've lost most of their revenue. Like, so I'm very careful about that. And like, I'm also at a stage where I'm still very much in the growth process. I'm still very new at this.
You've been doing it in earnest for just under a year, really. I think
just under a year.
2 years like, old, but yeah. Exactly.
So YouTube channel, I just started dabbling the same way I did on TikTok. Didn't expect it to go anywhere. Just see what would happen last year. January is when I decided to be like, okay, this is going to be it. YouTube and newsletter. I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm putting everything into it. So I was one of those kids in high school who, I was not like in the AV club, but I was AV club adjacent. So like I learned.
They're all your friends.
Yeah. So like I knew how to edit video, or like I learned in high school, basically what a video edit program looks like, how to edit video, the very, very basics, like what a timeline looks like, dragging stuff. Like I learned that. So I had that in the back of my head when I went into this. And I started small. But I'm also a person who believes firmly in paying for a program when it's good. Like, I don't want to deal with ads. I don't want to deal with, like, if I find something I like, I will just pay the subscription fee and you know, deal with.
Participate.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so I very quickly just was like, I'm going to need a photo. I'm going to need like a thumbnail image editor. I'm going to need something where I can edit on my phone for vertical. I don't mm-hmm. do vertical on my phone anymore, but I started out that way.
CapCut has a desktop app.
Yeah. And then I'm going to need, and that's actually very interesting because if I was to do it now, I'd do it different. But now I'm kind of, I'm locked into Adobe because I've just been using it for so long. I do Premiere Rush on the phone, Adobe Express, Premiere Rush and Adobe Express for vertical video, and then Photoshop for thumbnails. If I could do it again, though, like people always ask me, I'm like, if I could do it again, I would just do CapCut. It's easier. I feel like it's a lot less complicated for what I need. Because I'm not doing multiple camera angles. I'm not doing, like, my needs are very simple and Adobe's very expensive, but because it just kind of does everything I want and like, I'm happy with it. And like, my process is very streamlined at this point and I don't have I don't have the energy to like completely upend it to start something, you know, to start somewhere else. But if I was to do it again, I would start on CapCut.
For those listening.
Yes, I would. It's CapCut's easy. It starts, you know, free and it's like you can do it on your phone. They have a desktop app. Like I would, you know, but
is it so? Well, so the figuring out like these challenges, is it much different for you than like, you know, figuring out like, oh, how do I write this paragraph? Like, how do I write the lead, the headline for this? Like, is it just kind of the same thing, but like a different medium? I don't know.
It is different in that like I don't think about writing. Write. I don't think like I know like some people
I can tell you're so prolific.
Compose in their head and they think about an article. I just like sit down and write. And like people will have like a long research process where they like research individual things and like put it all together and like have a research. I'm just like, okay, like I don't know. Like I need to talk about X. I think I have enough general knowledge. It's funny. I'm thinking right now about like something I just wrote yesterday. It's like a 3,500 word script, which is going to be like my longest video ever on SpaceX's Starship's recent flight. And I'm focusing on
the chopstick landing. Right?
I'm focusing in on that's just that because like I'm everybody's talked about the flight itself, the overall of the flight, here are the different parts. But there's like 30 seconds of that flight that is mind-blowing, and there's a lot happening. And so I'm like, okay, I'm just going to zero in on that. And while I'm doing it, you know, I have a lot of questions, a lot of research I need to talk. But so, like, this is part of why I haven't been able to hire a newsletter editor yet. I don't plan things out. Yeah. I just get to the question, and then I deal with that question at that time when I'm writing. And then, you know, say, okay, email sent to, you know, XYZ rocket engineer about X, and then I just start the next paragraph.
I know what you mean. Like even like for me, like I have a producer I work with for the podcast, and I have a designer I work with on like visuals and stuff, and I've got another person who helps with social media and like sometimes like cleaning up transcripts. When I think of like how do I break apart like the pieces of this and like make it more efficient to me? It's like anything. It's almost like it would only make it less efficient for me because it's all just like, you know, the way I work. It's not ordered. I don't know. I think that's a big
challenge. Just I do it. I don't think about it. I just do it. And so, it's a huge challenge to bring other. That's actually exactly my problem. It's a huge challenge to bring other people into that.
To break yourself into pieces.
It feels so haphazard. Like when I explain it, it's so haphazard, but it's just very like I just do it. Like, I don't know. And so in some ways, like so learning, I kind of think of learning to use like Premiere, learning to edit video, learning to do those things. Like akin to my never ending quest for between changing productivity software and writing software. I literally just switched to Obsidian yesterday. And
I don't even know what that would be.
Like, it's like an open source one that I've heard a lot about. I was using Bear before. Mm-hmm. No problems with Bear. Bear is lovely and beautiful. Before that, I was using Ulysses. Again, no problems with Ulysses. It's lovely. It does everything I need. But like, it's just like, it's the joke. Like my joke is like, I need to switch software to feel something. Like,
I know what you mean. Yeah.
And like, same thing with to-do. Although the to-do list one is different because like none of them exactly do what I need to do.
I used to do Notion for everything. But now I just have a notebook here.
Yeah.
And I just like every week I'll like write down my tasks for each day. And like it's a way of like making sure I don't get like so many tasks and subtasks, et cetera.
Yeah.
And then I write them down in pen, and then I'll like write like the numbers next to them, the order of that I want to do them in. But I've been doing this now for all of 2024 after like for a couple years before I was in Notion. And I love it.
Does it work? It okay.
To just be yeah. simple.
Yes, yeah. That's my problem. Like, I'm probably going to, right now I'm using Asana. Before that, I used Notion, but Notion was just too clunky. Like,
yeah, and it's just, there's too many options.
That's exactly
everything
it.
Everything forever.
It's, yeah. But it's not, like, when it comes to just, like, project management, it's not, like, simple.
Yeah.
And then, you know, at some point, probably soon, I'm going to switch again. But, like, I also, I'm like, I need to have some sort of editorial calendar so, like, I can keep track of, like, when stuff is sponsored. So anyway, yeah.
That's the hard part. I actually do like Notion for that.
That's the mess. Yes, no. And that's the thing Notion was really good for keeping track of stuff like that. So, but I see the, I see it.
Wait, actually, quick question. So speaking of keeping track of everything, I want to get a grasp on everything you're doing at the moment. So you're doing Ad Astra, you're doing Daisy Geek Girls.
Yes.
I think you're still freelancing a little bit. What is everything you're doing right now?
So yes, that's basically most of it. Ad Astra is like that's the thing. If people ask me what I do, that's the thing. That and that is YouTube, newsletter, and vertical video. Vertical video is like the third tier though. So like some video, some weeks I get four done, some weeks I get none done. And I don't think of it as a big deal either way. Daisy Geek Girls still ongoing, just you know, but that's not a revenue generating project, just like you know,
like
for fun.
Your passion fun.
Right. I still freelance regularly. I do space news for Fast Company and other places. That's I still write for places that kind of let me do what I want and say what I, you know, like just kind of they trust me to get the job done and they don't like have to manage me a lot.
Places you've had like relationships with for
exactly.
a long time.
Exactly. So, and I still love doing that. Like just the quick hits. But a lot of what I like, and so that's pretty much everything I think right now. A lot of what I'm spending my time on actually is just figuring out what and how I want to cover things. Like at the beginning of the year, I was feeling the pressure to cover every single space thing. Yeah. And I quickly realized that that's not possible as a
person. I would love to walk through that. Like
okay.
basically your production process from like coming up with that idea through writing the video script to like turning it into a newsletter. Let's say, I don't know, maybe you have a better example in mind, but one I watched last night that I liked was can Boeing Starliner astronauts vote from the ISS?
Yes, that was a
so
fun
what's,
one.
Like, the soup to nuts on that.
That was so a lot. I get actually a lot of my ideas on social media. I take a news story. I talk about it on like Blue Sky is Blue Sky as it's been growing has been really good for this. I do Mastodon as well, though. I'll basically say like, here's a thing that's going on. And then like I'll talk about it or I'll say like this is what I think is cool about it and I'll wait and just see what people say. I'll just have the discussion with people. And I will also say this doesn't work for everybody because I love social media. I love I actually really enjoy being on these platforms. This is not a thing I have to do. I like talking to people about this
stuff. You're a very social person.
Yeah, that's why I do what I do. So that's where I start and then I'll see what people have to say about it. And this has been more and more. I didn't start out doing this. Like when I started in January, I just looked at it and it was my opinion and nothing else.
Angle.
Yeah. Now I look at what are other people asking about this? What questions? I know a lot about this already. What questions do people who don't know a lot about this?
Who aren't so immersed in space world.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, that's what I used for my Starship video as well. The most questions I got was on that catch. And I was like, okay, like, zero in on the one thing people are asking about. So Boeing Starliner was the bane of my existence and also the gift that kept on giving in terms of like, because I just became such an expert on it because I kept
going.
There's
a lot of videos about it.
Yeah, I kept him going. I just went in deep on one mission and just kept, as the new stuff kept coming up and hitting the headlines more and more, like I had, you know, I already knew it. So it was very easy for me to just come back and keep doing. But that was the one question. And, you know, it wasn't something that really occurred to me because I do know that Starliner I do know that generally astronauts can vote on the ISS. Like that's something I've known. But when people started asking, can people vote on the ISS? Will they be able to vote? I'm like, oh, yeah. And then I'm like, well, how actually does that work? And so I did just some very basic research on it. And then I was like, oh, they have to submit a card in advance. Like, I don't know that they,
but
you know,
because they're up there for extra time, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So like they have to submit a card before they leave, but they were only expecting to be up there for 1 or 2 weeks in June. And they weren't expecting to still be there in November. So basically NASA is really, really, really helpful. Like they're
oh, in terms of like information.
Yes. And like, I am fortunate in that I have, they generally, NASA press people know who I am.
Do you have like a list of contacts there who are like, you're always, you know?
Yeah. Like hey. Yes. And like, they know me and they know that despite the fact that I'm doing an independent newsletter and I don't have necessarily the publication name behind me, they know that I'm not writing, you know, they know who I am. And so
they know you have integrity.
Exactly. And so I get quick responses and well-researched responses. It's actually, I'm very grateful. But so basically I sent this email, I got a response a few, you know, days later on the ins and outs of it. And I was like, okay, I can structure a whole thing around this because there've been enough questions. So like for that video, I waited until I had the response from NASA to see if there was anything even there. Like, is this enough to do? Because for YouTube, that one, I think that one's only like 5 minutes long, but generally for YouTube, the thing I learned very quickly is once I got into the revenue program is that you want to have a video that's about 8 minutes long, because then you hit two ads.
Yeah.
And you just maximize revenue. Yeah. And so when I try to think of topics, I try to think of things that will be a bit bigger, because at the beginning I just did these like quick 2 or 3 minute videos, which are great, but YouTube audience is looking for something a little different. First of all, they want longer videos. And then second, for the revenue share, you want a longer video. That one's shorter, but generally I try to hit at least 8 minutes.
You need like, you want something that somebody can settle in for one or two videos on their lunch break.
Exactly.
Without touching their screen.
That's exactly it. And like, learning about YouTube viewers' habits has been a big part of this journey. What they like, what types of videos, what topics do well, what topics I want to avoid, that sort of thing. But then, so then I sat down, I wrote the script, like I told you, just kind of, I sat down, started writing and then researched where I needed to. And then basically I don't plan, I'm still at a point where I'm not planning ahead in any significant way beyond like, here's a launch date. I'm probably going to want to do something around that launch date.
These are the days I probably want to do.
Yeah. Like I know generally like, so much comes up at the last minute in space that it's very hard to have like an editorial calendar planned weeks ahead. Like usually I'm just kind of seeing what comes up. So like usually I try to have a finalized script by the end of the day, Tuesday, so I can film and edit on Wednesday. And then I like to put the video out Thursday evening, unless it's more timely than I'm, you know, but like I'm generally, that's generally my
and then the next day maybe a lot of people do this and I hadn't ever seen it before, but I hadn't seen this before, so the next day you put the newsletter out, which is just the script, but I mean not like, it's not like you like just copy paste blah blah blah. You add in links and you put in images, and like reading the newsletter first, I read some of those before I watched the video, I was like, oh, this is good. And then I watched the video, I was like, wait,
it's the same thing, and that's what people I think don't realize. So it is such a low lift. The newsletter is, because I've already written the script. So basically when I started this, my husband is like, he was a big helper in terms of helping me figure all this out. And he is like a very big YouTube watcher.
Many cases when I talk to people for this, it's like, oh, my partner like is like kind of the invisible hand here.
Yes.
Too.
Oh no. And he is like, he is the deal we made and that we still have is he moderates my YouTube comments. Cause like, I was like, that's the one thing I don't necessarily want to touch. I don't want to be the first eyes on it. I do go through them, but like he has the first eye on it.
That's healthy.
Yeah. I was like, that's the distance I need from, you know, this project. Yeah. But So like when I first started, you know, I didn't actually envision the newsletter when I first started. It was just YouTube. And then a lot of the people who followed me through, I'm lucky to have people who followed me through like my little different projects, like, you know, they started following me when I reviewed books and then they were interested,
like,
you know,
a decade.
Plus. Yes. Yeah. Like they've been following me for a long time. And so they were all like, love the video, but we don't love video generally. Yeah. Do you have plans
to read? We followed you for reading.
Exactly. Yeah. Do you have plans to publish this anywhere? And I was like, okay, that's a good question. And so I started out putting it behind a Patreon paywall. It worked sort of well. But at the end of the day, for me, also having a written alternative is about accessibility.
Yeah.
You know, like people who don't like, I have something called misophonia, whereas like unexpected video noises, like unexpected noises, yeah. like I find them overwhelming. And I find having a, like, that's a good, it's a good, at the beginning, I just did it because I was like, I don't want to gatekeep accessibility. Yeah. Now I realize that expands my audience, the potential for my audience so much, because a lot of older people don't want video. A lot of younger people
they
do.
They just want their inbox.
Yeah. And so, and a lot of people who started out as newsletter subscribers now watch the videos. Uh-huh. And so like it is, it's really interesting, been interesting to see like who clicks on the links, like what is going on there. But yeah, it is like an incredibly low lift. Literally after I publish the video, usually, so I usually send out the newsletter at 11 a.m. the day after the video is published. 11 a.m. Eastern, and literally it's just copying and pasting the script, going through, cleaning it up. A lot of times, like if I'm like specifically talking about what's on screen, I'm gonna have to change, like if I'm narrating through like a live like
you're pointing to like
exactly like I'm gonna have to, so I do significant editing on the newsletter itself to make sure it makes sense, and then like do screen grabs or like photos, and I try to format it nicely. The video, the script is also part of the reason, actually the other reason I started doing the script is I wanted to be able to provide my sources, and YouTube, the show notes box doesn't really like the the description box doesn't really, it's not a really great way to do that when so this provides me a way to just like link throughout the newsletter to my sources, because I think that's really important to me. Yeah. I want people to be able to go pull the FAA filing that I use so they can understand what I'm saying. Because I want people to be able to do that. I think that's great. And so, that's a big part of the newsletter for me. And so just like going and adding those links, which the, like for me, the Arc browser has been like revolutionary to be able
That's
to
another one of these productivity tools I just haven't gotten around
to. Oh my
yet.
God. I love it because of the like design and the way like the spaces are done. I can like just like throw all the links up there and then go back when it's time for the newsletter and then find them and then just link them quickly. I love it.
I gotta try it.
Oh my God.
Wait, real quick. I want to ask about your relationship to your audience. You were kind of referring to it a little earlier. People who've been following you for years. You were saying you love being on social media. You've got 25,000 followers on Twitter, 8,000 on Instagram. You know, you're saying on Blue Sky Mastodon. I didn't check there. Admittedly, but yeah. What is your relationship to your audience? And maybe the question is like audiences, because clearly it's changed. People have come to you at different times in your career for different things, and even just like, you know, newsletter versus YouTube. Relationship with your audiences.
So it does vary by platform. Like Blue Sky is, you're going to get all everything. You're going to get the parenting stuff. I have a 5-year-old. You're going to get everything. Cause that's just kind of like my stream of, that's the place. That's the new Twitter for me. Like basically a Mastodon is just space. Like I only talk about space. It's very subject oriented. Blue Sky, I do talk about space a lot. It's just like, that's, you get more of me. Like Instagram, I have never cracked the code on. I am convinced I never will be able to. So Instagram is where, like, if you want to see what I'm eating for lunch in my stories, that's where you go. Cause like that's like,
very, just like personal family.
I don't care. Yeah. Because I just don't care about,
I feel the only way to crack that these days, is you have to just be doing like super engaging reels that are like so studied.
That's exactly. And I just don't have the time. Like Instagram is, I think for Instagram, if you want to succeed at Instagram, it has to be your primary focus. And it's just not that important to me. So like I do publish on there, but I'm just not.
It's less of a work platform. For
but you. Really the text, because text is close to my heart, because I'm a writer, you know, the text based platforms are where I spend the most of my time. Yeah. But what I like to think is, and I think it shows through, people have told me it does, I'm the same person wherever you ping me. If you talk to me on YouTube, if you talk to me on Mastodon, if you talk to me on Blue Sky, it's the same personality. It's the same, like, I don't have personas. I don't have this online persona. The person you talk to on Mastodon is the same person you run into in the grocery store. Like, and it all, I think it all very much shows through. But like I do what I do for myself at this point, not my audience. Like that's a big thing that I had to learn, especially learning YouTube, where some of the topics closest to my heart crashed and burned for whatever reason. Whether it's the way I presented it, whether it's, you know, like, cause like YouTube script writing is very it's an art, and it's something I'm still learning, frankly. And you know, there's things that somebody like I've watched a lot of like Hank Green stuff, as a science communicator. There's a lot of stuff he can get away with that I cannot, for various reasons, in terms of I'm new. People aren't willing to give me as much leeway. I'm a woman of color talking about this. I mean, you know, there's a lot of stuff. So it's like learning. There's a huge learning process. But that being so, I have learned that I do the topics I do because they interest me. I'm not. When I first started, like we talked about before, I felt the need to hit every big space thing. The bottom line is I have a lot of, like, for example, SpaceX is a topic that always does well on YouTube. Always. But I like SpaceX. I have a lot of respect for what they do. I have a lot of issues with what they do. Like, I'm not a fangirl. You're not going to find me, like, fangirling over them. But I also have, like, respect. Like, that booster landing was amazing. That was an amazing accomplishment. And I have a lot of respect for that. I have a lot of respect for the engineers who work there. So... I don't actually need to hit every flight. Like, I don't need to do that. And I was feeling like I had to for the audience and for, like, to make myself, like, to make my reputation, like, everybody on YouTube does this. I need to be doing it too. Like, no, I don't. And, like, it's killing me to have that frequency of, I would rather pick, like, for example, the Boeing Starliner, like we talked about, one interesting mission and go in depth on that over multiple videos than just, like, hit every space thing that comes out.
Well, there's one thing. I don't know. There's this older issue I've done of Curious Spotlight. It was one of the first ones I did. I interviewed this guy, Andrew Huang. He's a big music YouTuber. And he has his, like, framework for deciding what to work on, where, like, there was, like, an 18-month period where he decided he'd gotten to, like, 300,000 subscribers. He was like, I gotta go all in. Like, I'm gonna do every Tuesday, every Thursday, or every Monday, every Thursday, I'm gonna get a video out. And so he has this kind of, like, you know, like ikigai, like the Japanese concept of, like, he kind of had an adapted version of that. So, like, he had, like, a huge spreadsheet with, like, hundreds of ideas he's always adding to. But his, like, framework for deciding what to work on, which I had to bring it up because what you're talking about reminded me of it, is, like, it's basically the same as ikigai, but there's, like, I think one difference or so. Anyways, this is what I want to do, what I'm good at, what's trending, what's worked well before, and what makes money.
Yeah.
It's like, I just want, ideally you hit all five, but you have to hit all four. And if it doesn't hit all four, you don't work on it.
Yes.
So it's like, you're kind of in the process of, like, developing that sense.
That's exactly it. I mean, the process of figuring it out, and I don't mind doing something because, like, I know it'll do well. Like, that's okay. But I want to, like, at the end,
something else too.
It has to be, like, I have to be passionate about it. I have to be interested in it. Like, I'm like, in the end of the day, that's what matters to me. And, like, process, like, figuring that out. And it's also, like, accepting early that I don't know that I'm ever going to be a creator on YouTube that has, like, a million followers.
Well,
like,
okay, so I'm looking at your YouTube channel right now. And I want to get back into what you were just saying in a second. But your most popular video has 163,000 views. It is really double of
the next. Wow.
And it's so it's 7 months ago, Intuitive Machines lands on the moon sideways. Did you expect this to be, like, why do you think it was?
No. I think because it was a small commercial moon landing, part of NASA's CLIPS program for the Artemis mission. And nobody, I genuinely feel like people weren't paying attention. NASA, I have a lot of respect for NASA. They have not done a good job at publicizing, for whatever reason, the Artemis program. The number of people I have to tell, like, no, NASA's handing over low Earth orbit to commercial companies so they can go back to the moon and establish a base. And people are like, wait, what? And I'm
As somebody, like, I don't follow space. I got too many things I already follow. It's not one of the things I follow. The news I get, the news that bubbles up to me, is basically just SpaceX. Not even, like, Blue Origin. I forgot Blue Origin even exists. Yeah. I don't even know if they still do stuff. But it's just SpaceX because, I mean, the Elon Musk, like, whole,
and just,
like, bubble.
They're
effect.
Flashy. Like, they're doing really cool things at a time where it feels like no one else is.
So, like, that just chokes, like, the like, you know, the little bit of this niche that, like, bubbles up to the general public, me who doesn't follow space. It's like, that just dominates that,
right? And, like, I think it kind of goes back to actually what we were talking about a few minutes ago about, like, I want to cover the things that people necessarily, maybe they are covering them, but, like, it's just, it's not that was something that people weren't talking about. And then all of a sudden, everybody was talking about it. And it's like looking at what's happening. To me, that was a huge thing. It was a huge deal. It was such a cool mission. So interesting. And it's like that sort of thing. Like nobody was talking about Boeing Starliner. And then everybody was talking about Boeing Starliner. Mm-hmm. And it's like everybody's talking about SpaceX all the time. So what can I do that is not that? And so like that's part of why, like, I do talk about SpaceX. Like, I have 20-minute video going up.
But again,
you're
finding the angle that, like, you don't see out there.
Exactly. Finding the angle that maybe, and because of that, like, that's, and that's, this is exactly, like, tying back to what I was saying. I'm never going to be, I don't think, maybe I will. I don't think I'll ever be the person with, like, a million YouTube followers.
Yeah.
Because I'm not chasing the big story, necessarily chasing the big stories that other people deem are big. These are the things that I think are important. Yeah. But I'm not going to. I also don't have a strong point of view about SpaceX. Like, in terms of, like, I have, I think, a rational point of view about SpaceX. That is a good point of view to have. But that's not the point of view that's going to. Yeah. I'm not ranting about them. I'm not raving about them.
That's what's
going
to get the
views. Which is what both of those will get the views.
I want to talk about the goals. So the million views thing. So before our million subscribers, before we talk about that, I think, like, I want to. We have not talked about this at all, really, like the financial side of things, the viability of this as a business. So I see some ads in the newsletter. I didn't necessarily see ads outside of YouTube AdSense in the videos. Yeah. And I'm not really sure how much it like costs you to produce a given video outside of your time spent.
Yes.
So like, let's tell me about the financial side of the business, the feasibility of the business, how you're making this work.
That's a great question. So I went into this expecting to make no money for the first two years. I was just like, for the first 2 years, I have my husband, we are lucky enough to where we're comfortable without me making an income at all.
And you do have the freelance as well.
I have the freelance to support it. And I have health insurance, which is like anytime anybody asks me how I do what I do, how I freelance, how I deal with the uncertainty, I say I have a partner who brings in a steady income and has health insurance. And honestly, that's how I'm able to do it. And I don't want there to be
living in America.
That's exactly it. And like, I feel like there are too many people who don't talk about that part of it. And it's like, I am lucky, I'm privileged because I have that.
Yeah.
So I did not expect to make any money. Like, I expected to be in the hole deeply for 2 years while I'm building this up. And my view was, because like it's like starting a small business, and first small businesses don't make money usually for the first 3 years. So I was like, if at 2 years I'm still making no money and it's going really badly, because also I expected it to take a very long time for me to get into YouTube's revenue. I did not expect to have a video go viral. I thought
I was looking at Social Blade. They like track, you know, YouTube analytics and stuff. And I think in like your first month or two, you already hit like 4,000 subscribers.
That's
your first month or two of doing it in earnest.
Yes. And so like I hit the subscribe, and I hit like with that video, which was maybe that landing was in like late January or February. I started in earnest in early January. So it took me like a month and a half to hit the YouTube revenue. So like to get into the partner program.
Because you need 1,000, right?
You need 1,000 subscribers. You need more than that.
Okay.
But no, you need 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 watch hours.
Okay.
The 4,000 watch in a year, 4,000 watch hours in a year, I think, which was that. I was like, oh, I'm never going to be able to do that. And it just because I had one video go viral, I was able to do it. So that was just lucky. Like that was just right. Good timing. Good, you know, all of that.
Well, and like, you know, your years of experience producing media.
But so much of like if like going viral is
luck.
Just luck. So that was great. And that was unexpected. So, but you know, and I do actually make a decent amount off the YouTube partner program. It is like, you know, it's a good, it's great.
And it only continues to build.
Yeah.
And as you get the backlog, people watch those videos.
And so, in that sense, and that has in some ways like been like, okay, I need to make more evergreen content. So that's been an interesting, like, you know, calculus
where
as
you're
I've
kind of falling into the strategy.
Exactly. But like, for example, one thing I did was like, I did a video on Voyager 1's like thruster like swap a few weeks ago that was very slow to start, but it's been like steadily building, steadily getting views. And that's, I'm like, I want more of that, I think. Like, because Voyager 1 is like very close to my heart. I love that spacecraft. So I will talk about it until I'm blue in the face. So it like checks all the boxes.
Going back to like what your goals are with this, like you were saying, like not necessarily a million subscribers, but like, you know, I mean, you're kind of just earnestly creating this stuff and like getting a little more strategic, like every time. And it sounds like there is a world in which you do just keep building subscribers and you are generating like a full, you know, like a full like salary revenue through AdSense and through also like newsletter ads. Is so like, what are, let's say your, cause this will be the 2-year timeline you were mentioning.
Yeah.
What's your goal by end of 2025? So that's kind of, you know, a little more short term.
Yes.
And then also more of like long term dreams for what this is.
Yeah. End of 2025. There's no money goal. Like, honestly, in terms of like, I want to make an income, obviously. I'm not doing this for fun. But like, I want, by the end of 2025, I want to be at a place where I understand the types of stories I do. I still don't understand the kinds of stories I do. Like, I know I cover space. But like when I look at a story,
you know that this is an Ad Astra story?
That's it. I want to have an understanding of like a better like intuitive understanding of like, okay, this is a story I'm going to cover versus just like, okay, I'm just going to follow this for the next few weeks and just kind of see if
like
anything.
What is your editorial mandate?
That's exactly it. Like, what? Because I can't cover everything. That's
which
the thing.
Then allows you to maybe start like hiring another writer, or producer, or whatever. Because then it's like, you know, now what this? It's not just a haphazard. Like, this is just what I do. It's like, oh, this is what I like to do, and this is what, it goes back to Andrew Huang's like YouTube ikigai. It's like, this is what works. This is what makes money. This is what's worked before. You're trying to learn that.
That's exactly it. I want to have it figured, like that part of it figured out. Like, what does this mean? Like, what? What Ad Astra already, people already say like Ad Astra, I go there for like unbiased coverage about thoughtful analysis, which I love. That's what I like to do. But like, I didn't start there. Like, I started out, you know, 10 months ago or whatever, doing more newsy stuff, and the stuff that did well and the people liked and actually that I enjoy more is analysis.
Yeah.
So like, it's not a money goal, although like I do am doing now one off, like, or like, you know, month, like some YouTube, like companies coming to me to do YouTube sponsorships.
Oh,
okay. I also do vertical, like do vertical sponsorships and as well as the TikTok, the TikTok revenue program as well. The creator.
Oh yeah.
It's not a lot, but like, you know, it's something.
Not as good as YouTube's.
Yeah. So there's a lot of income sources, and part of figuring all this out is like, I need to get the newsletter. One of my goals is to get my newsletter subscriber base up, which.
Where's that at right now, if you don't mind sharing?
It is approaching 2,000 subscribers, which is phenomenal for an independent newsletter. And
do like, they just come through YouTube too, where you like mention it in a video? Or
they come from everywhere. They come through social. Yeah. I try to be very mindful of every time I'm going to like, okay, this is what's coming this week. Here, the YouTube video is coming this day. Here's where you subscribe to the newsletter if you want it.
Yeah.
That always brings subscriptions. But now it's like word of mouth. I think like I am not, because I promoted it very hard for the first 1,000 subscribers. I did a lot of like beehives growth, the boosts and stuff like that for the first 1,000 subscribers, because I was like, that to be in any way legitimate,
you need a foundation.
I need a foundation. Yeah. Once I got there and stopped, and I figured the growth would taper off, and it's actually increased, I think, the rate of growth. And I think because people are recommending it now, and it's like out of my hands.
Well, it's a unique, I mean, I found out about you because somebody at Beehive, one of my colleagues, I was like, hey, like, well, you got any favorite newsletters these days? And he was like, shout out Ryan Roop. He was like, oh, you got to check out Swapna's stuff. Like, it's so good. I'm a big fan.
And that's
so
what
like, you are a unique product. You're selling a unique product.
That's what, and that's what I'm finding, that people are really responding to the way I write, the way I talk about things. And I think people are looking for a sense of wonder. And that's the thing I've never lost about space. I think people are looking for a reason to be inspired. People are looking for a reason to have awe when everything around us feels like trash. Like in a world, like it's a hard world to live in. And I think people are looking for that. And I like multiple people have told me, like, I follow you because you, like, I love your enthusiasm. Like, it, space isn't my thing, but I love how much you love this. And, like, yeah. It comes through in everything you do. And I think, so I think that that's something that I bring to the table, where, yes, I'm a journalist. Yes, I try to, you know, I try to abide by those principles. But also, like, one of the reasons I wanted to go independent is I didn't want to have to tamp that down in order to report. Like, I don't, like, when I'm reporting for a third party, like a third party organization, I try to keep the enthusiasm low in, or like how cool is this, low, in order to, like, be a little more professional. I don't have to be professional on my own newsletter. I can just be like, this is the, like this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Like, look at this. This is insane. Like, how did this even happen? And that's what I try. Like, what I'm realizing more and more is those are the things I want to write about. And so how, and like, so all of it is just slowly figuring out, how do I write about this stuff more while also feeling like I have a hand in everything that's going on? Yeah. Like,
I love this. So I want to talk about this for a second, and then we'll probably wrap it up. But two things this reminded me of, like, one, I want to go back to, like, one of the very first things you said about your husband being like, oh, you have to go do your own thing. But then I'm also thinking about, like, you know, Taylor Lorenz, the big internet culture journalist who just went independent, like, in her post when she was announcing that, she was like, I think this era of, like, faux neutrality journalism is dead. Or this woman I spoke to back, like, a few months ago, Umbreon Ali, she has this newsletter, Central Desi, about, like, you know, the Desi community in New Jersey, for the Desi community in New Jersey. And she was like, you know, like, 20 years ago, I was reporting on these things and, like, having to be neutral. And, like, there were things where, like, they affected me and I felt wrong to be neutral. And so I wanted to, like, make a news outlet, like, kind of for us, by us. And I think that, to me, is what is really interesting about, like, kind of this creator journalist thing, is, like, I, you know, in an era where media literacy or media trust is lower than ever, I saw some graph about this yesterday. It's like, I think people, for better and for worse, are looking more for, like, people who are, like, doing what you're saying, like, writing about what you care about with your personal point of view and, like, being honest that it's your personal point of view. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if there's a question there, more of just, like, what I'm seeing. But
no, I totally agree with that. Like, I don't want to have to tamp down that enthusiasm. And, like, also, I think it's so interesting because, like, it's just spaces. Everything now, every like the way that 10 years ago it felt like every company was a tech company, starting to feel like every company is a space company now. And so, like, you can't cover all of it. And so instead of feeling like I have to cover everything, and this is the journey I've been on, maybe I just cover the things that make me go, like, I cannot believe what I'm saying. Like,
This is like the conversation about, like, AI and, like, AI content. Yeah. Like, how it's like, you know, when there's all this slop, like, what matters is having taste, and what taste is having a point of view and, like, a personal lens on this, right? And it's like, that again is what you offer, is, like, your very particular taste on space.
Exactly. And so that's what I'm trying to figure out. I know my taste, obviously, because I'm like, okay, I think that's cool, and I can tell you why I think it's cool. And that's a talent, and that's something I've worked very hard to build and develop, and a skill. But also, like, when can somebody else look at a space story and say that's an Ad Astra story? And that's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I know because I have the, you know, it's me.
I think it's so smart to articulate that as like a goal. I really like that.
I want somebody else to be able to look at something and be like, oh, this is something she's going to cover because this is a super interesting story. And that's the sense I'm trying to, that's what I'm still figuring out.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great place to end it. So, Swapna, thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, of course. Go check her out at Ad Astra Space on YouTube. And this has been Creator Spotlight Podcast. I'll see you next week.